You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 12th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I'm surprised to see that people are still suggesting that somehow the COVID deaths are being inflated. I guess this is down to anecdotal reports of doctors in America possibly putting down COVID as the cause of death, when it hasn't actually been ascertained whether that person actually had COVID or they may have had it and also had underlying complaints, and it may have been these underlying complaints that actually caused the death. That may be so, but the fact is we have unexplained excess deaths in their thousands in every country that actually has COVID. Now, I pointed out a week or so back that the Financial Times had looked at every country that they could get statistics for that actually had COVID to see how many excess deaths there were. And the average was twice as many excess deaths as the COVID numbers. And this is happening in all countries, not just countries in Europe, which cleared out their hospitals. And we've just been told over here in Britain, we've got 36,000 deaths that are marked down to COVID, but we've actually got 50,000 excess deaths in the country, more than we should have. And the way that they get the average number of deaths is they look back over the last 4 years and they take the average number of deaths from that. And we've actually got 50,000 more than that, which says that it's actually been underreported. I mean, these deaths are unexplained. There's been reports that some of them have been strokes, heart attacks, and blood clots, and the people have been dying in the ambulance before they get to the hospital, which is something the medical staff have never seen before. People dying in the ambulance before they actually get there. And they've suggested the reason for this is that the COVID, in some cases, it turns people's blood to sludge, basically, and it causes these blood clots, which cause strokes and heart attacks. So there's been quite a few middle-aged people that have been dying with that. And also, you've then got the deaths in the care homes. Now, before they actually admitted it, I was saying that they're only telling us the people that are dying in the hospital with COVID. They're not telling us about the people that are dying in the care homes. The numbers are much higher than we are being told. And now, finally, they are including the numbers of the people that have been dying in the care homes. We've also got the question of the tests. We know that the tests are faulty. We know that when they first isolated the actual virus itself, it wasn't a pure sample. So consequently, tests that have been purchased from China and elsewhere, they've been faulty. They haven't had a very good accuracy rate. And in actual fact, it was more likely to be accurate with a doctor's assessment than actually from the test itself, which is why they told the doctors to make these assessments rather than doing the test. I mean, you could do a test and it may take 2 or 3 days before the test results come back, and then the test results may be wrong. But if the doctor can see that the patient actually has COVID-19 from the symptoms that they are presenting, then it makes sense that they would do that. You know, the actual what's actually happening is the opposite of what conspiracy theorists are saying. They're not bumping up the figures. They are deliberately not telling us these figures. And the reason for that is probably because they're worrying that they're going to be sued for this. Because the reason why we've had these masses of deaths in the care homes, which have very likely all been white people, because people of that age, there was no immigration going on at that time. People that came over here in the 50s and the 60s, they would have been about 20 years old. And the people that are dying in the care homes are sort of all in their 80s. So I think the majority of them dying will be white. But the reason why they're dying is because they caught coronavirus while they were in hospital. And in the drive to clear out the hospitals for the expected avalanche of patients, which never actually happened, they sent a lot of these people back to the care homes knowing that they actually had coronavirus. They sent them back into these care homes where the care homes didn't have any masks or gloves or correct PPE. And these COVID patients basically infected everyone else in the care home. So you ended up with lots of people dying in these care homes. And it's directly down to the hospitals clearing all these patients out that were in there for other reasons. And while they were in there, because of the lack of PPE that the NHS had, because of those failures, people that had gone into the hospital with different complaints ended up picking up coronavirus and then being sent back to the care homes. It's an absolute scandal. I've been saying since the beginning of this that the incompetence that's been shown by the government is just absolutely phenomenal. We know who the most vulnerable group in society is. It's the over 80-year-olds. So why weren't they concentrated on? Why weren't they shielded? Why did they concentrate on sending these elderly people back into the care homes from the hospitals? They should have just shielded all these old people and protected them. And maybe they could have had the rest of society still going to work. And so long as people actually had masks, they wouldn't have been able to catch the virus. This is the other incredible thing. We've got the government now saying when you're out in public, you should be wearing a mask. But don't, whatever you do, don't you dare wear a FFP3 mask, that we need to save all of them for the medical personnel. Well, it's only the FFP3 masks that will filter out the virus. If everybody had a supply of FFP3 masks, and gloves, so they could just go out wearing these masks and gloves. Or very, very few people would have actually caught the virus, and people would have been able to continue doing their normal work, and the virus would have just burnt itself out. But even now, they're still not saying that. I think what they've done is they've banned suppliers from actually selling FFP3 masks to the public, which is just incredible. They should have set up ways to actually produce these masks ourselves. And it's basically a special type of plastic in the filter, which will filter out tiny, 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 tiny particles. And that's what gives it this classification of FFP3. But they're still lying to the public because they're saying, don't wear these masks, you don't need to wear them. But if you want to protect yourself from this virus, yes, you do need to be wearing them. And that would have been a simple solution. But all of this was unavoidable once they failed to close the borders to Wuhan. When they saw that China was closing the borders to Wuhan, that's exactly what we should have done. And it's not up to China to protect the borders of Europe and the borders of America. It's up to China to protect its own borders and protect its own people, which it did. And we failed to do that. And everything that the government has done since then is just phenomenal. The incompetence that has been shown here, and the increase in totally avoidable deaths. And I do think they're trying to avoid being sued by the relatives of these elderly people that were sent back from the hospital and actually caught this virus in the hospitals, because it's now seeming that the biggest vector for the virus is the hospitals themselves. It's just incredible. And instead of pointing out that the group of people that is most likely to actually be dying from this is the elderly and having an inquiry into how that could happen, all we are hearing about is the fact that black and minority ethnics are 2 to 4 times more likely to come down with this disease. And they're having a big investigation into that. Well, what about the fact that men are more likely to get the disease than women? There's no investigation into that, is there? But we have this investigation into the elevated members of our societies, the black and minority ethnics, whilst there's nothing being done for the elderly. Where's the inquiry into all these deaths in these care homes? And we discovered today there's another group that are more likely to actually come down with this disease. Men working in low-paid jobs are significantly more likely to die of COVID-19 than anyone else between the ages of 20 and 64, a horrifying report has revealed. And they're actually 4 times more likely to die than anyone else. And that's the same figure that they're saying for blacks. They're saying they're 4 times more likely to die. We must have this huge inquiry. Well, what we're finding out here is that it's men in low-paid jobs as well. Where's the inquiry into that? Those who work as security guards have one of the highest death rates, along with social care workers, drivers, and chefs. And they are up to 4 times as likely to die as university graduates working in professional jobs, such as accountants, lawyers, engineers, and teachers. And I wonder how many blacks there are that are working as social care workers. Probably quite a few of them. I wonder how many are working as security guards, drivers. I mean, those three jobs there, you would associate with coloured people doing those jobs. They're the sort of jobs that they enjoy doing, and you seem to have a lot of them there. I mean, we're even told that the social care sector has a large number of black and minority ethnics in it. So why aren't they suggesting this as the reason that they're more likely to get it? Because they're in these low-paid jobs, because they're more likely to be interacting with lots of people. If you're a security guard, say, or a driver, you're going to be meeting lots of people every day. Why aren't they suggesting that? Why are they saying that the reason why blacks and minority ethnics must be getting this is because they've been socially deprived by the white man? He hasn't given them big enough houses. And that is basically what they are saying is the reason for it. Of course, there's been no investigation into any biological reasons for it, because they've already worked out what the conclusion is going to be already, that it's the white man's fault. Men make up 2/3 of the workforce killed by the virus in the first month after lockdown was introduced in Britain, showing they are far worse affected than women of the same age, the Office for National Statistics data showed. And remember, this is people between the ages of 20 and 64 as well. This isn't the elderly. Men working as security guards had one of the highest death rates at 45.7 deaths per 100,000 people. This was more than quadruple the average for all men of the same age, 9.9. And one of the worst jobs, one of the worst people that have been hit by this are drivers. I mean, why didn't they give the drivers FFP3 masks months back? They would all still be alive today, wouldn't they, if they'd been driving with these masks? It's just, I just can't believe that they're still giving out false information about masks today and saying that there's no evidence that wearing a face covering will protect you from the virus. There is. It's just you have to wear the correct face covering and you have to tell people how to use them. When you're taking them off, make sure it doesn't touch your mouth or whatever, and make sure that you clean your hands afterwards, and you don't touch the front of the mask, or all that sort of thing. What they should be doing is telling people how long those FFP3 masks can be reused for, because we know there is a shortage of this equipment, and they're supposed to be disposable. You're supposed to throw them away after a single use. Obviously, people can't afford to do that, especially not when they're going for £65 a mask on the black market, but you would imagine that they would be telling people how to get the very most that they can out of these masks, but they're not. Just another failure of the UK government. And moving on from the corona news, we've got a news report here that is related to what I was talking about in Real Britannia with Max Musson about the continued invasion of illegal immigrants into Britain while the actual indigenous habitants are locked in their homes. And what we've got here is not actually illegal immigrants, but we've actually got Middle Easterners being flown in, particularly into the country from areas that are likely to have this coronavirus, so that they can meet up with their families. Boris Johnson's government has reached a special deal with Athens to fly in over 50 migrants from Greece, despite the coronavirus pandemic and the country's flight ban. So the rest of us can't fly, but if you are non-white and you're coming in from the third world, then you will have special flights put on for you. Travel between the United Kingdom and Greece was suspended in March by the Greeks amidst the Chinese coronavirus pandemic, leaving some migrants in the Mediterranean country unable to join family members who had already reached British shores, one way or another. But the British government has now, for whatever reason, made a special deal with the Greek government to fly in 52 migrants from overcrowded camps for the purpose of family reunion, also known as chain migration. So if they can get somebody into Britain, just one member of the family, then they know that they've got a link to Britain and they can use this excuse of human rights and they have a right to see their family, so their family can be brought into the country as well. Britain is almost unique in the world for having failed to impose bans on travel from any territory at any point, including Wuhan itself, and for not even requiring new arrivals to undergo a period of self-quarantine. Well, they're actually talking about doing that now. They're saying that anybody that comes to Britain has got to go into a self-imposed period of 14 days quarantine, which is of course 4 months too late. The government has hinted strongly that quarantine measures may at last be on the way now, but likely not until June. And France, which is currently sending illegal boat migrants to Britain in record numbers, will be exempt. "I hope it is only a start," said Lord Dubs, the Labour peer, who helped facilitate the flights, in comments quoted by The Guardian. And of course, I've mentioned Lord Dubs many times. He was a Jewish child refugee to Britain during the war, and instead of advocating for what's best for British interests, and instead of pointing out that these illegal immigrants could be terrorists, they could be rapists, they've got low IQs, they're certainly not going to be an asset to the country, instead of showing his loyalty to Britain, the country that took him in, he shows his loyalty to his own people. He shows his loyalty to the Jews by advocating for these quote-unquote refugees to be taken into Britain. And of course, I've gone into the reason for that many times. Jews feel much more comfortable in multicultural societies. They will always advocate for more multiculturalism in the societies they live in, unless the society they live in is a Jewish society. And of course, they don't do that into Israel. And this Lord Dubs in particular, he advocates for the so-called child refugees. The child refugees that 80% of them turned out to be over 18 when they tested them in France. And I think it was a similar figure when they tested them over here in Britain. He says there are other children who want to join their family in Britain under the Dublin III Family Reunion Accords. And there are other children who are in the Greek camps who may not have family here, but also need to be helped to find safety, he added, referring to EU rules and regulations which the United Kingdom is still bound by. Now, I saw footage of this flight that was coming in last night, and none of them looked like children to me. They all looked like adults to me. I mean, they call them beard babies in Finland, because they're obviously males in their 20s and 30s that are claiming to be under 18. And the fact that Britain will accept these so-called children is just an encouragement for them to come here, isn't it? It's an encouragement for families to send out their youngest-looking son and say to them, make your way to Britain, and then once you get there, then call for your human rights and say it's your human rights to see your family, and then they can all be brought over as well. The 52 migrants, which according to The Guardian included people from Syria, Somalia and Afghanistan, were also mostly not children. As I say, because I could see that as well, but this Lord Dubs is pushing this narrative that it was children. Family reunion policies, particularly where migrants claiming to be minors are involved, have come under sustained criticism from migration sceptics, as they encourage would-be migrants to send younger family members ahead, generally via criminal people smugglers, to act as a bridgehead for their relatives. And also, they turn out to be very dangerous. It was a so-called child refugee who tried to set off a bomb in a bin on a London train. It was a so-called child refugee that was adopted by a white foster family who then tried to knife them. It was a child refugee in Germany that carried out a terrorist attack involving knives. It was a child refugee who was adopted by a family in Kent who then turned out to be so much older and was threatening to rape the mother. A child refugee from Iran we've had that was actually about 24 in age and was cracking on to the young girls at the school that he was put in, because these people, they get put in schools alongside just the normal British or European children. And of course, they're so much older. So you have the threat that they pose to the young white girls at the school. You also have the threat that they pose by being so much larger and more aggressive to the boys that are at the school. The potential for abuse in this system is absolutely massive, because the fake refugees can just say that they've had their papers stolen. They don't know what age they are. And of course, it's impossible to find out who they are, because we don't have access to the country that they claim that they have actually come from. And of course, they might not even have come from that country. They know that if they say that they are from Syria or Iran, they stand a much better chance of being accepted into the country than if they say they are from Pakistan, or if they say they are from the Lebanon or somewhere like that. So they give fake countries as to where they've come from. They're much older than they are. They know that due to human rights, they're not going to be checked biologically for their age. And of course, the Swedish dentist that did actually speak up about this and said that these so-called children who he was looking at their teeth and doing their dental work, that they were obviously 10 or 20 years older than they were claiming to be, he lost his job and was sued by the government for breaching their human rights. So they know that they can get away with coming into our countries and pretending to be much older, and that there's no way that we can prove otherwise. And that anybody that does discover that and speaks up about it, there is a high chance that they are going to be punished by the state for doing so. And again, this is happening while the British people are locked into their homes. We've got plane loads of these people arriving in our country. So it's not just, as Nigel Farage was saying, we haven't just got them arriving by boat. We haven't just got these fake refugees arriving by boat. We've got these beard babies arriving by plane. That's all being laid on for them by the British government. And they are fake refugees because there is no war in France. And they are supposed to ask for asylum in the nearest country to where they come from. So they are all fake refugees. Every single one of the ones that are on those boats that are coming to Britain are fake. Well, I've got a bit of good news here to bring you as well. Regular listeners will know that I've spoken about this grooming gang report and the fact that the British people have not been allowed to see it for quite a while now, and there was a petition to get the government to explain why they haven't shown us this grooming gang report that we were promised. And the government, rather than actually answering the petition, just gave the usual load of waffle and said that the far right might misuse the statistics, and we're spending a lot of money on the victims, and we're spending a lot of money on this, that, and the other. And they didn't actually give any reasons for it. And the chair of the petitions committee, a Miss Catherine McKinnell, who is actually the Labour MP for Newcastle North, has written to Jacob Rees-Mogg quite sternly on the subject. And this is part of her response to Mr. Jacob Rees-Mogg. Your department's response explains the government's current work on child sexual abuse, which includes investigating the characteristics of group-based child sexual exploitation, and states that this work will inform the government's forthcoming strategy. However, the response fails to respond to the petitioner's request for this work to be published. My committee has already received a significant volume of correspondence complaining about the government's response, and I am sure that your department has been receiving similar correspondence directly. Your department's response to this petition was also substantially late. A response to this e-petition was requested on the 6th of March, but not received until the 24th of April. It has been agreed with the Leader of the House, that's Mr. Jacob Rees-Mogg, that the government will respond within 21 days, making your response 4 weeks late. I fully appreciate that the government is currently under significant pressure, but it is disappointing to receive a late response that also fails to adequately respond to the petition. I am therefore writing on behalf of the committee to request a revised response that directly responds to the request made by the petition. This should clearly state whether the government will publish its research into the characteristics of group-based child sexual exploitation. If the government does plan to publish this, your response should set out in what form and when. If the government does not plan to publish this, your response should also explain the reasons for this. I would be grateful if you could provide a revised response before the House rises for Whitsun on Wednesday the 20th of May, given the substantial time that signatories to this petition have already been waiting for the government response. I am copying this letter to the Leader of the House, with whom the standards for government responses and timeframes within which these should be provided have been agreed. Best wishes, Catherine McKinnell, MP, Chair of the Petitions Committee. And that's excellent. That is good news. That is a stern response to the rather weak response of the government to the request for them to explain why they have not shown us the results of their grooming gang investigation. I don't think anyone was expecting the government to actually step in and point this out. This is quite surprising. I hope it's actually genuine and it's not partisan, and it's not this Catherine McKinnell, Labour MP, her trying to score points against the Conservative government. I do hope this is genuine and she appreciates the fact that a lot of people are rather concerned about this, and the fact that it's being covered up ostensibly because the government are worried that the far right might actually use these statistics. Well, if the statistics show that the non-whites are not involved in the grooming gangs and the Muslims are not involved in the grooming gangs, then that will silence the far right, won't it? But if the statistics do show that they are involved in this, then that just proves that the far right were right all along, and the government should apologise for its mistreatment of the whistleblowers, the same as the BBC and all the mainstream media that have mistreated the whistleblowers about this over the years. But they've got to face up to facts here and admit the truth about the cause of this problem before it can actually be tackled and something can properly be done about it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.